Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, Blood River Radio family, welcome back to the second hour. Welcome to anybody who's just now tuning in. In case you're just tuning in, we're doing, this is Hellstorm Week, the February the 13th, 14th, and 15th, 1945. The Reign of Terror, we've been talking about that. We have Mr. Tom Goodrich on, who is the author of the book Hellstorm, and we have Mr. Paul English, who's the voice of the audiobook. We have Miss Monica Schaefer on, and she is pretty much ramming robbing this show tonight. But in case you've been listening, I'd just like to add a few little details. There were 26,000 Allied troops there in Dresden, and the powers that be, Churchill, Roosevelt, they all knew about it. They didn't give a hoot in hell. There was 500,000 refugees there. So Tom is right. The death count is probably, I wouldn't be surprised if it was 500,000. I don't know how anybody succeeded, made it out of there. The even machine gun. Well, anyway, I'm going to shut up. Go right back to you, Miss Monica. Continue on what you've been doing. I just had to get that little bit in there. Go ahead, Miss Monica.
Yeah, I just wanted to address something that Thomas Goodrich said earlier, and he was being extremely humble in saying that he didn't think he had really done anything much. And it's the contrary. You know, this kind of information, like what Thomas, what you've written in this book, and I know you are the author of several other books where you're in, it's truth telling, and this is absolutely essential in this war that we're in. And like we were saying in the commercial break, that the war goes on to this day, right? And it's largely, they do it by way of deception. I mean, there is this motto for a certain, you know, country in the Middle East, that their motto, by way of deception, thou shalt make war. And so this has been going on for a long, long time. And so when somebody comes and writes a book like what you have put together in the book of Hellstorm, and then the summer 1945, and other books that you have written, this is a huge, huge contribution to, on the right side here, you know, on the right side of history here, because it's not the side that is put out by the mainstream or by Hollywood, and we know who owns and controls those institutions. And so I just wanted to put that out there. And then Paul English, you were talking about the communication and you know, how is it that you, sometimes we just are having such a hard time, such a struggle to reach people. They've been so hypnotized and programmed by all the weaponized language that's been used. And so to even just broach the subject of maybe talking about the Jews, for instance, I mean, we've been so trained to not even say the word, the Jews. So yeah, it's a big obstacle, but I think that right now a lot of people are waking up, and as cliche as that might sound, I think it really is true right now, because the enemy of humanity, they seem to go crazy when they think they're in their end game and they've got it all wrapped up and finished, you know, and they go crazy and they drive it too hard and too far. And guess what? They will not win. That's my hope and my prediction. But I'm going to pass it back. I think, Tom, if you would like to continue discussing the contents, you know, actually, I'll just say one thing. When you were inviting Paul to add something about Dresden, one image that sticks in my mind and is just horrible is when those few survivors who had been in their basements, many of them got cooked and never did come out and got literally melted, like you said. But those who did happen to survive, and then when they came out, and then when they were strafed again, I just, that there's nothing more evil than that. And also, some of them would fall down and trip in the, because the pavement, the asphalt was melting. So they'd fall down and then their hands would get stuck, and then they would just be stuck and became human torches and this kind of thing. So yeah, I'm going to pass it back to you.
Go ahead. There was, I'm glad you brought that up, Monica. It's very important. But the following day, after the two raids, the high explosive raid and the phosphorus raid. Around noon, word got passed around throughout the city of the people who were still groping through the streets, looking for their lost loved ones, or just trying to find a place of rescue. They were told to go to the big, large open city park, basically. And by the way, thousands were probably killed in these parks because that was one of the places they would hit. When they came in with the firebombings, they knew that the people would seek safety in open spaces because you can't burn down all the trees. But they were killed, no doubt, there also that night. But the next day, around noon, word came that people if you want to find out who you're missing, or who you love and who you know that you're going to be missing, that you go to the open park, the big open park in part of town, in the center part of town, or you go down along the river, along the Elbe River, along clear spaces. And people did. And it just so happens that there was another raid coming at that time. And this is when the U.S. P-51 Mustangs went to work. That's the fighter fighter planes U.S. flew. And this is when the U.S. opened up on them with machine guns and cannon fire and just slaughtered them by the thousands. It was just horrible because people talk about deception. Boy, that was obviously planted by some agent, perhaps, to go to these places to be slaughtered some more. But one of the sadder things of the whole mess was that the animals at the zoo, which was located in the park, Central Park, was hit the night before, and animals were running loose, and some of them were running without legs, or running without one leg or two of their legs. But the one pilot just couldn't get enough, apparently, so he had to shoot the last remaining giraffe there was. He could see that and chased it down and shot it, and it just infuriated the zookeeper. He saw that, and that's how probably as many people died in that terrible U.S. By the way, it was called Targets of Opportunity. That's what the U.S. called it. This terrible. And by the way, I cover that in the other book I mentioned, Summer 1945, Germany, Japan, and the Harvest of Hate. They were doing the same thing to the Japanese, the very same thing. So it's a horrible thing. But the Germans went back to work and tried to scrape up all the people who were dead. They pitchforked the bodies that flattened out on the streets and were buried in the asphalt. They got everybody they could get. For the next week, they just finally they had to erect large funeral pyres or piers. I'm not sure how that's pronounced, but pyres, and burn them. And excuse me.
And that's okay. And those were sometimes photos of those bodies on wagons were later passed off as, oh, these were the Jews that the Germans yes. gassed or killed. Yeah. I mean, the yes. photographs have been misappropriated. And this is what enrages me too, because when people, yes. when you try to tell them true history and they say, what about the pictures and what about the survivors and the testimonies and all that? And they've actually appropriated some of these pictures of dead Germans mm-hmm. and reversed yes. it, which is enraging. And, yes. you know, I wanted to also mention about what drove the people, the soldiers in the Allied side and also the Red Army to do the horrors that they do. And they were driven into frenzies of hatred towards the Germans. Yep. This had been yep. going on for actually a long time. Like the hatred towards Germans has been pumped for, I think, decades, was it not?
Well, I can't speak for that because I didn't research that, but yeah. Ilya Ehrenberg,
Monica,
as you both mentioned,
I'd like to comment on that real quick. Like my brother-in-law, who's 20 years older than I am, he was, he was born in 1926, 1927, and until he was educated, to answer your question, Monica, he taught until he was a fairly old man, older, you know, in his 30s. He thought I heard him say that he said that the Germans, he had been taught, the Germans were animals. They were worse than animals. They taught them that in even the First World War, they said these dirty, stinking Huns, they would bayonet children. They would cut the breast off of women. You know, they were rape nuns. See, what they did, see, these Jews were doing that, but it's like we always say, the Jews always accuse us, white people, of what they do. But that's why they had built this hatred up for years, since World War One, the dirty, stinking Jews. I mean, that's what they did. You know, they said, well, they're dirty, stinking soldiers. But anyway, back to you, Tom. I just thought I would answer that question. I'm sure my brother-in-law was just one of thousands of soldiers that had been taught that propaganda.
Yes, and I've been to Germany quite a bit and lived there, actually, a couple of times. And I don't think there's any cleaner, decent, more beautiful people on Earth than the Germans. They're just the absolute opposite of what these people would like to believe, World War One and Two. But Ilya Ehrenberg, he had, as you both noted, he had flyers printed up. He was basically the top authority as far as propaganda in the Soviet Union at the time. And he would have propaganda flyers floated from airplanes over red lines, red army lines, would say things like, yeah, Do your dead level best. Kill all you can. Kill the Germans, all the women, all the children, everybody. Nobody's guiltless.
And he was, surprise, surprise, he was a Jew. People, we hear the music. We're going to go to a quick break, and we'll be back in just a minute with Mr. Tom Gritches, Mr. Paul English, and Monica Schaefer. We'll be right back.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard-right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
The Ennis is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Hey, this Blood River Radio family. This is a very emotional show. We're going to go right back to Monica after. I'm just going to say this. Picture this right here. Picture the pavement. You have asphalt pavement that's literally running like water because the fire was so hot. The fires reached the temperature of 1,500 degrees in that city. When all the fires came together as one, the fire plume went 3 miles into the air. The copper roofs on the building ran like water. And like Paul and Tom said before, the poor German people could not get away. They would actually get stuck into this pavement, and they were just, can you imagine having liquid pavement run on you, liquid copper? And that was all done by design, people. I'd like to just retreat one more time. We talked about the different waves, the bombers, when they sent the first initial waves in, and then they kind of, like, the all they thought was the all clear, or with the rescue workers, you know, Red Cross workers come in, kind of dig people out of the rubble. They knew that was going to happen. The people that doing the bombing knew that was what it was going to be. Like, that's what, then that's when they sent the second wave in to catch the maximum number of people that had survived the initial wave. They knew they would be out in the open. And this was all an intentional genocide. Back to you, Miss Monica.
Yeah, I'll just tell you what my mother used to say. And she did not often talk about the war. She didn't really talk about that much. But the one thing that sticks in my mind, because it was the recurring thing that she said over and over again as we were growing up or as we were young adults, why Dresden? Why Dresden? She would tell us, you know, they knew, like the Allies knew that it was full of women and children and that there were no military targets there. And it was also the hospital city, like Tom, like you had mentioned. And she just said it over and over again, why Dresden? It made her extremely, you know, sad. And she just couldn't get over it. She could never get over it. Now, she also told us about how she herself personally didn't get physically affected during the war so much because, well, she grew up in Berlin, but they fled with their knapsacks on their backs, with their valuables in. And so she made it with her mother and her younger brother to Bavaria. And so she didn't suffer herself in terms of being maimed or raped. Well, she was at the age where had she stayed in Berlin, she would have been a victim of that for sure, because she was born in 1928. So when the war started, she was 11, and a six-year war. You can imagine these young girls. And that's one of the things that happened. But what she told us is that after the war, they were so hungry that when they went to try to plant some seeds in the ground, just to thinking ahead, they would faint. They would faint over and over again. Now, that's when she and her family really suffered. And on this, in this vein, I'd like you to continue the discussion, and maybe we'll pass it over to Paul now to comment on that. Like, did the war on Germany actually end May 8th, 1945? Go ahead, Paul.
Well, I would say no. I think it's still been going on to this day, to be quite honest. They say that the other side never ever sort of forgive or forget these things, and they go on forever. And I think there's a lot of evidence to suggest that in great part that is true. We know that we've got Eisenhower's killing fields. That happened. That was completely out of order. About 3 million German men died, you know, returning soldiers were just kept in fields and just rotted over a three-month period or whatever it was. There's that aspect of it. There is the shipping of Germans to Russia to be consumed there by the Gulag system that happened in huge numbers. I don't know what they actually are, 3 to 4 million or something. It's colossal numbers of people. And so the idea was to destroy that nation. Why? And I tend to the view that, I mean, I think there were a lot of reasons for it, but one of the reasons was that during the 20s, the people that had arrived in Germany were riding quite high in the Weimar Republic, destroying it and chewing it up. And then come 1933, this all changed, and the beano that they'd been having was quickly shut down and stopped. And Germany goes from a country of 7 million people unemployed, and 3 years later has just under a million unemployed. 6 million men or something, 6.5 million men are put back to work. And you get to a point in 1936, only 3 years after it started, where I think per capita they were the wealthiest people on the face of the earth in 3 years. Yes, now, the ingredients for that are that they effectively dismissed the banking arrangements that they had been encumbered with. They got rid of them.
And who did they get rid of?
This is the most, yeah, this is like garlic to a vampire, this stuff, because if you think about what would have continued to occur had Germany been unmolested from that point forward, and it was definitely interfered with, what's going to happen? You're going to have diplomats and ambassadors and heads of state visiting Germany, like Lloyd George did, and saying that Hitler is an amazing man and the people love him, which was true. They did. Why? Because they got their dignity back and they got their sense of oneness and togetherness back, in spite of all the ructions that they had, which were considerable. You know, they were going through a government every 3 to 6 months, weren't they, prior to that in the late 20s. It was just madness. So there was, you know, a lot of good background. What I mean by that is that it was such a mess that any good change was going to be welcomed and worked for. And so those were the times. But if you've got other people from other nations arriving there and say, God, this is amazing. How have you done this? And the answer is, oh, we basically got rid of the international bankers and cut them out of the system. And we used barter a lot. And we put all our, and we've made work the basis for our own wealth, because you see, we are a cohesive nation. Because that's what we know that we actually are. We now know this again. We lost touch with it, but we've been reminded strongly that this is it. Well, you can't have globalism if you've got a nation like Germany sitting around, can you? I mean, invalidating every useless, pathetic, idiotic idea that communism has brought up.
Hey, Paul, the most wretched caller thing. I'd like to ask you a question. Would you like to take a caller, Paul, to ask you a question?
Sure, yeah, I'm fine with that.
Okay, go ahead, Cameron. Put the caller on.
Hello? Yeah, hi, it's Murr. I don't want to interrupt too long here. Hi. In 1882 was the first ever What to Do About the Jewish Problem held in Dresden. So that was part of the retribution for there. And there's also about 300,000 immigrants in the city. You know, I mean, they... constantly getting even and more than even for things that never even happened. But also the what was I going to say? The Germans, you know, when they're brought over the paperclip, we hear a lot about that as if it's bad. They were booty. Everyone wanted the German scientists. Russians got some of them. But part of the deal that is never discussed is the Germans wouldn't have it unless Ike let the Japanese out. He was having them tortured and killed in the camps. He wanted to kill all of the Japanese in the camps. So, anyway.
The ones in America, in the American camps. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But I just wanted to put that in there about Dresden in 1882 because it's a pretty, you know, specific of how they operate. Overkill.
Well, thank you so much. Yes. Thank you. So, do you have a question for Paul before you go? Or Tom or Monica?
I just wanted to add that. And thank you. It's good to hear you. I missed the first hour. I'd forgotten you were going to be rescheduled for today.
Well, so, we go to our archives. You can also send me an email. So go ahead. I didn't want to interrupt you, Paul, but that lady had been hanging on for quite a while, I believe. Go ahead, Paul.
That's okay. I've heard Mer's voice before. She's always a pleasant arrivee in conversation, so she's great. And I can't remember what I was talking about, of course. I've no idea what point I'd reached. Oh, yeah, we were just talking about the banking thing, weren't we?
Yes.
I'm simply saying, yeah, that if you've got a nation that is showing the way out to the degree that Germany did, you cannot run your globalist scam if that's going on. Because everybody would say, but what about Germany? You see, they don't do any of these ideas that you're talking about. And look at them go. So we had a situation here in Britain in the mid-30s where the British government forbid German tourist ships to dock in England. Why? Because the English had been taught that they'd won World War One. They were still going to a toilet in the back end of the garden, the English, right, this time, and living like pigs most of the time. And so you've got the Germans turning up on these liners going on some big paid-for holiday to Brazil or wherever they were going. They didn't want them turning up in fine clothes. They're going, but we beat these people, and in 1933 they were brassic lint. What happened? They're going, oh, yeah, they overthrew the banking system. Can we do it
probably
here in England?
Probably a break.
I mean, honestly,
that is probably the most salient point you've made. We've got to go to a break. We'll come right back. Paul, as soon as we come back, I want you to go right back on that point, and I'll have a comment to make about that. People, please hold on. Do not go anywhere. This is a riveting show. We'll be right back.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
There's reports of ongoing shelling in Russian separatist-controlled areas of Ukraine. Some say it may lay the groundwork for a Russian invasion. President Biden said the chances of it happening soon are very high.
High chances will happen in the next several days.
Biden says Russia is moving more forces in, not out, of areas surrounding Ukraine, like the Kremlin says, and that Vladimir Putin is trying to create a pretext for an attack.
We have reason to believe that they are engaged in a false flag operation to have an excuse to go in.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken explains.
We are laying it out in great detail with the hope that by sharing what we know with the world, we can influence Russia to abandon the path of war and choose a different path while there's still time.
This is USA Radio News.
Water. It's essential to life, but it's also something that so many of us here in America take for granted. Imagine how different your life would be without access to clean water in your home. What if you had to walk to the nearest creek, stream, lake, or pond to get water? Suddenly, going to work and school wouldn't be an option because you and your children would have to spend your days collecting water. This is the day-to-day reality of most families living in the world's poorest countries. But what if I told you that you can change that reality for just pennies a day? Through our water projects, Food for the Poor is working to meet the need for water in 17 impoverished countries. But it won't happen without you. Incredibly, it only takes $15 to provide a child access to clean water for life. $15, decades and decades of access to water for a child. Give the life-changing gift of water now. Just text USA Radio to 91999. Text USA Radio, all one word, to 91999.
Police have arrested more than 100 protesters involved in the so-called Freedom Convoy demonstrations in the Canadian capital of Ottawa, which officials said turned violent. The convoy protests began in late January and were initially focused on the Canadian government's vaccine mandate for cross-border truckers. But now it's expanded into a broader movement against public health measures to limit the spread of COVID-19. On Friday, police arrested more than 100 people and have had 21 vehicles towed in Ottawa. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau invoked the Emergencies Act to allow the government to expand measures to end the protests and pointed out to CNN that some people in the U.S. are funding the protesters. Officials in the U.S. are also concerned about a potential trucker convoy protest ahead of President Biden's State of the Union address on March 1st. According to CNN, you're listening to USA Radio News.
River Radio family, we're going back to the good war. We all won. The only people that ever that won that war were the same people that always win all the wars, the people that financed both sides, the Jew. We'll go right back to Paul. He made the salient point. Besides, a salient side point. I don't know how to say that. He said that the powers that be, the international Jew bankers that control every stinking country in the West right now, they could not allow the rest of us dumb goyim to realize we could get along without their stinking fractional reserve banking system. But that was golden what he said. I'll go back to you, Paul.
Well, yeah, you know, you've covered it well, Eddie. I mean, that really is it. I mean, you've got to also bear in mind that they wouldn't have been able to sort of entrench that without people from our own race being corrupted and going over to that side. That agency, let's just call them Freemasons. It covers an awful lot more, but there's a lot of Freemasons involved, because Freemason is basically without the Kabbalistic Judaic element, it's nothing. It's a load of sort of gobbledygook, you know, and all this kind of stuff that they do. It's very powerful, by the way. I mean, I'm not saying that they're stupid, but the overall orientation of it, of course, is to undermine the ethics and the law of Christian civilization. I'm not talking about churches here. I'm talking about something much more important than that. So, you know, you've got that invidious force. And in England, when the lodges were set up, they drew these people in who are always on for being in a club and not having to hang around with ruffians like me. And slowly but surely, over sort of decades or centuries, they've just become a diseased lot. You have to understand the French Revolution was organized in London, in the Continental and the Intercontinental clubs, which are big Masonic dungholes, and they organized the French Revolution from there, you know. So all these plans, they came out of London, and you know, no wonder they say perfidious Albion, because it's not the English people. We don't know what's going on. It's this cartel, this sort of, you know, parasitic mind agent that gets hold of things. We've still got it going on today because a lot of people can't see it. We can. And if you can see it, you then get demonized, don't you, for being a troublemaker or whatever other terminology is in place. But yeah, you know, and as we were saying there during the break, every nation that runs counter to the central banking scam gets bombed. Literally, they literally get bombed. That's what happened to Germany. They were trying to bomb it into oblivion. It's what happened to Gaddafi in Libya. People that ever got a terrible view about Gaddafi. I'm not saying that these people are saints, but they're certainly the least worst option. Do you know what I mean? And they were doing, in Gaddafi's case, he was actually using the wealth, shocking, horrifying, of the nation for the benefit of his own people. You can't have that. Well, actually benefiting Libyans with the oil revenue stuff. If you got married in Libya under Gaddafi, they gave you $10,000 for a married couple just to get started. Hitler was doing exactly the same thing.
Yeah, I'll just jump in there because you said the troublemakers, you know, whatever they call them. Well, here in Canada, they call the troublemakers haters. That's what they call the troublemakers. Haters. And then also just to comment about the Freemasons, what's one of the very first things that Adolf Hitler did when he came to power in 1933 is he outlawed the Freemasonic lodges. Did he not? I think he closed them all down. That's one of the first things, because he knew
this is the only person to ever do it.
Wow. So yeah. So I would love to just bring, this has just been absolutely fascinating, but I'd like to bring it back to the Hellstorm book and this what happened after the May 8th, 1945, because I had known that probably more Germans died after the official war ended, like the bombs stopped dropping and whatnot, then during the war, and as particularly in the first 2 years of so-called peace, it's very likely that more Germans died after the bombs stopped than during that frightful, horrible war, which was already so bad. And we talked a lot about Dresden, and I'd like to reiterate that same fate befell many other cities. I mean, Hamburg, that was early on in the war, and several other cities early on in the war was absolutely flattened, and so many people were killed. And then some of the smaller cities where, you know, perhaps 80% of the population of some of the smaller cities died. So this is just, you know, horrible. But now let's talk about what happened after the war officially ended, and then the Germans were either starved or many, many, many women raped, tortured, absolutely tortured. Some, and many were brought into the gulags in the Soviet Union and worked to death. And on and on and on it goes. And the Red Army was not the only perpetrators of the tortures. The Allied side also did their horrors. So Thomas, would you like to speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. But you're right about that. After the war, of course, starvation was a big deal. Other nations were getting fed. They were supposedly low on food, but not Germany. Germany could not find products or the implements to actually plant their own feed, their own food. They were denied the seeds to sow the fields with. Tractors wouldn't work because they just couldn't find the parts for them. And so you've got starvation going on in Germany now, and I don't know how many thousands, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands died from that. But in the cities too, it was very terrible. You had people living in holes in the ground, basically, because they haven't been built up yet, the cities hadn't. They were basically Well, here's some of the more graphic things that occurred after the war. And that was not just killing people, but just torturing them to death. The Americans did it. Especially Poland, behind the Soviet lines, the Eastern Front, the most terrible camps they would have, the Gulag camps, for torture. And that's all you can say about it, was just torture. The Jews were in charge of the camps and ran the camps, and they decided what kind of torture these people would get. And there's an entire chapter I write about that in the book. And oddly enough, or fortunately enough, much of the information I got was from a Jew who did his research too. But we're talking some terribly sick crimes committed, not just the slaughter, the murder of people, but the outright torture. This kind of crap went on for several years after the war. In fact, well, we're used to seeing Germans get dressed in the 1950s, dressing up nice and starting to actually put on clothes. But these were the small percentage of people who actually survived the war. And it was just amazing, the number of people who died after the war. If you feel like somebody's keeping a track of this or a count, I'd like to hear what
I've got a little quote here, Tom, actually, that's worth reading because it's really appropriate. This is from a guy, Senator Homer Capehart. And on February the 5th, 1946, he made a speech before the U.S. Senate. This is an extract from it. Just to give you a sense of numbers, okay? It'll take about a minute to read. He said this. Since the end of the war, about 3 million people, mostly women and children and averaged men, have been killed in Eastern Germany and Southeastern Europe. About 15 million people have been deported or had to flee from their homelands and are on the road. About 25% of these people, over 3 million, have perished. About 4 million men and women have been deported to Eastern Europe and Russia as slaves. It seems that the elimination of the German population of Eastern Europe, at least 15 million people, was planned in accordance with decisions made at Yalta. Churchill had said to Mikołajczyk, when the latter protested during the negotiations at Moscow against forcing Poland to incorporate Eastern Germany, this is Churchill speaking, "Don't mind the 5 or more million Germans. Stalin will see to them. You will have no trouble with them. They will cease to exist." So I think realistically we can say that more Germans perished in the immediate years after the war, or were dispersed, or whatever language they're going to use, absorbed by, than during the war. I think it's realistic to view that.
That's what people say when they read this book, Hellstorm. They say that it's staggering. It's staggering that as terrible as the war years were, and the last two war years were really terrible because of the firebombing and the slaughter of German civilians, just outright killed when the Americans or the British, or the not so much the British, but the Americans and the Russians went through. But then afterward, the war, when there was no arms, they had no weapons to fight off these people. It was just incredible. Go ahead, Paul.
We got to go do a quick, our last break, y'all. Man, this is a riveting show. Guys, Tom, Paul, Monica, dear Blood River Radio audience, we're going to our last break. Please don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Hello, friends. This is Jacob from Blood River Radio. We call the kings into account and tell the truth to shame the devil on this show every week because we are of the firm conviction that our cause cannot succeed without true revival amongst the remnant, amongst that principled minority of the dispossessed majority. Now is the time to stand and be counted, to do like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who would not bow down to the false idols of their day, even under pain of death. Like the 300 mighty men of valor who surrounded the Midianites with Gideon, or the 7,000 men that God told the prophet Elijah had not bowed their knees to Baal in a time when even calling fire down from heaven would not awaken our kinsmen from their slumber. If you are encouraged by our labors in the trenches for the kingdom and the cause of truth, liberty, and righteousness, I urge you to consider supporting this program. No donation is too small. We can do with thousands or even hundreds what our enemies and the powers and the principalities of this present darkness need tens of millions to do. So please donate today at BloodRiverRadio.com and help us take up the hedge and stand in the gap against the great evils of our time.
This is Attorney Jason Robb, General Counsel of the Knights Party based out of Harrison, Arkansas, and proud supporter of Blood River Radio. I, like you, am concerned about the destruction of our beloved America and our racial kindred people and our cherished liberties. As an individual and as a nation, liberty is what we seek. Liberty is important. It is what allows us to be independent, and if properly used, liberty allows us to fully worship God in all areas of life. And with that worship comes more liberty. We are on the verge of anarchy in this country, and personal liberty is looked upon as a crowning achievement of the people. However, Christianity and white law and order is viewed as the enemy of this newfound freedom, and that is why it is under attack. Learn more by listening to Blood River Radio every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m.
Dear precious Blood River Radio family, we have a fabulous caller just called in. His name is Paul, and he has a question that he would like to ask Tom Goodrich, the author of this great book. Go ahead, Paul. It's an honor to have you call in, sir. Go ahead. Ask your question. Your comments.
Yes, and your investigation or your research. I have talked with people in Germany, what they call the Bundesland today, which means colored land of many people, and from the east and the west. But did you find anyone who was not completely disassociated from his own history and his own people, that looked at this as something still alien and foreign to them, the same as they've done to us here in America, especially in the South, what they call Reconstruction?
Paul, I can honestly say that the folks I did talk to were mostly women, survivors, and there were a number of men, but it's the women that mostly stand out in my mind. And to answer your question, no, I didn't find anyone that was not totally detached from their history. In other words, I could ask them certain questions about how did you eat, what did you eat, and questions like that, but I could never, nor would I, ask them if they were raped, and none ever offered that they were raped. It's terrible, because most women in Eastern Europe especially were raped. Yeah. I'm convinced. Women and girls, mostly they were all raped, because that's just simply the mindset of the Soviet soldier. But also on the Western Front, I think a majority, I can't really put a figure on the people in the West yet, because no Americans are owning up to it. Many of the Russians admitted how much they raped. They raped everyone they could find, but not the Americans, at least admitted. Then I find out later for this next book I wrote, Summer 1945, that Americans weren't any better than the Russians. As far as
they were not. No, they went. They raped. They did the same thing. Not quite as bad, because it was not a command, but it was something the officers condoned. But what
yes,
I was interested in, I had listened to people who were actually survived Dresden. These were all mostly old. They were older ladies now, but they were young women, and they were so disturbed and shaken they could not speak.
Yep.
This was over almost 50 years later, and what happened that night on the 13th, and of course the Americans came the next morning and strafed them with fighters. It was education and the propaganda that we have to this day about him.
I agree with you. It's called the Good War. Yes, it's called the Good War by the people who committed the war. The Jewish people who make the movies, one movie after another on the so-called Holocaust. It goes on and on and never stops. But Paul, were you, you're not of the age, are you? You're not of the age of, you didn't experience the war, did you? Maybe Paul's gone now.
Paul, are you still there?
Yes, I was born after the war. I was not, my father was in the war, but I was born after. But I've spoken to many people, and nothing like that, nothing I've never heard. We said we have another Jüdischständig behalten. It was the German soldier then. And the idea that they are teaching today is that they are demon. You see, Americans demonize everyone that is their enemy, whether it's the Southerner soldier or the Germans here. They're evil.
That's right.
And they're,
what Paul's saying is true.
Yeah.
What you're saying is true. I mean, I found that in the research of my books. Everybody who goes against America and its propaganda is evil. And that in itself is a war crime, if you ask me. Whatever. I thank you very much, Paul, for the question. It was very good, but so many people were killed, but they lived. They lived yet, but they died. In other words, they just never came back from it.
Yeah, if I might add something here, because I had a friend in Jasper who was a young girl in the East, what then became East Germany, during and after the war. And she told me years ago, and this is long before I knew true history, but she told me years ago a little bit about it, and that all the women and girls were raped. And she never did directly say that she was raped, but she just said it over again. She said all of the women, no matter how young, like girls and older women, all of them were raped, all of them. That's what she said. So from that, I take it that she also was. Now, recently, I visited her in, she's in a care home now, and very, I think close to the end. And she looked at me and she said, soon, with tears in her eyes, she said, soon I will be happy. Soon I will be happy. And she was really talking about, that she's looking forward to leaving this world.
I should add to this, and anybody who's read the book knows that an amazing number of rapists of the Russian army were Mongolians and other Asiatics. Not the white Russian, even though they did plenty of rape, just like white Americans did it too. But the majority of rapes, I'm convinced, was done by the Asiatics. From the Asiatic republics, the Mongolians and the Kazakhstans and people like that. But anyway, thank you very much, Paul, for the question.
Paul, do you have any more comments before you go? Before we let you go, Paul, would you like to make another comment before we let you go?
Well,
thank you so much for calling in.
Yeah, I should confess, I have not read his book because I read this for 50 years I've been reading, and now I'm finally finding they're actually making books now, like Heinz Schön and others. Although they are banned in the Bundesland, you can get them in America. And I've read, so I knew everything that Mr. Goodrich has researched. I knew it all. And it's so depressing to me and angry. It gets me so angry, I just cannot read anymore. I've got books now called What Happened to Königsberg and What Has Happened on the Wilhelms Gustloff and other things. And these are all such unrighteous things, and yet no one knows or cares. You see, if you hear about the same propaganda all the time, Titanic, then, well, it disassociates people from life. You see, it's all about the Jews, and that's the only thing life is about them. And that's, I appreciate that you have revealed these things to so many people, I understand. So I just want to thank you for all of that before I leave. So, Auf Wiederhören.
Auf Wiedersehen. Thank you so much for calling in, Paul. Thank you so much. And Miss Monica can tell if I'm sounding right. Auf Wiedersehen and viel Glück, is that right?
Yeah, that's good. Auf Wiedersehen, viel Glück. You know, I find it interesting what he commented, that it's banned in Germany, these kinds of informations. Yes, this re-education and so-called denazification carries on to this day, doesn't it, Tom or Paul?
Yes, it does.
Yes, it does.
They lie before the war, they lie during it, and they lie after it. And they're going to keep lying after it for as long as they can keep lying about it, because they have to.
By the way, I want to say
a permanent drain on them.
I want to say one more time, anybody who's interested in the book, the audio book or the video, can order it through Money Tree Publishing. It's our friend Dave Gahary, Money Tree Publishing or MTP. And anybody who's interested in mostly all of my books, they can go on mtgoodrich.com. It's mtgoodrich.com.
Tom, can they get one that's autographed by you or Paul? Okay, how could they get an autographed book from you if they want one for extra money, of course?
Well, they could go through Tom Goodrich, thomasgoodrich.com, and all my books are on there, but just had to get that out or I wouldn't have done my job, I guess, tonight, so I suppose.
I'm glad you did, because that was my next move. Yeah, I certainly did. Well, you know, we're about to come to the end of the hour. This has been, I don't think, this is probably the best show we've ever had. It's right there, equal to or greater than the show we did in Pensacola, Florida with the USS Liberty. People, before we go, Monica, what would y'all like to do next? We've got, what do we got left? 2 minutes? Basically 2 minutes. Okay. Go ahead. Thank you, Jay. Jay runs what a man he is. But Paul, what would you like to say? You or Monica, before we go, we have about 2 minutes.
I just want to thank you both so
really
much. Go ahead. Go ahead. I just wanted to thank you both and just go ahead. And you have the last word, please, Paul, and then Tom, if you can.
No, I'll keep it brief. I just wanted to say that Paul's question just then was a wonderful end to this, actually. Mm-hmm. Tremendous to hear his observations and to come from that grounding of experience. So that was brilliant. And I've really enjoyed this. It's just got better and better the longer it's gone on. But, you know, it's midnight here. Apparently, I'm going to go to sleep. I probably won't for a little while, but it's been great. So thanks very much for having us on. I've enjoyed
Paul,
it tremendously.
Thank you. You're a blessing to me, Paul. God bless you. And I would love to get – we need to do this periodically, because we cannot let the people forget. People, especially Americans, have a real short attention span. We have to remind them and remind them over and over and over. But thank you so much, Paul. Paul, send me an email. Please keep in touch. We've got to do this again soon. Would you like to say, Tom, before we go, we got about a minute. What would you like to say before we go?
Well, just thank you, Eddie and Monica, for having us on, Paul and me. And it's never fun talking about this. I can't say that I enjoy it, but it needs to be said, just like you mentioned, Eddie. And
yes.
Hopefully, my voice didn't give out too much tonight. But
you did great. You did fabulous.
Even if it did, the three of you picked up where it went off.
Fabulous. I'd like to say one thing to the audience before we go back to Miss Monica. People, don't sit on your tail and keep this yourself. Spread the news to what's going on, what we talked about tonight. Tell the audience good night, Miss Monica.
Yes, good night. Thank you so much. It's been an honor. Thank you.
The honor's been mine too. God bless you, Paul. God bless you, Tom. God bless you, Miss Monica. God bless you, Blood River audience. We wouldn't do it without you. We couldn't do it without you. Same time, same place next week, the 26th. I don't know what we're going to do, but it will be dynamite. Good night, everybody.